Okay, everyone, hello, welcome. Welcome to the last instalment of our special Alice in Wonderland celebrations. This is part three of our special podcast.
This one's called Off With Her Head. We've got some great stories. As Gareth said, the last in a series of three Alice's Adventures in Wonderland inspired stories to celebrate the 150th year of publication.
Yep. So without further ado, I'll let Benedict introduce the first story.
This is The Wonderland Mystery by Geoffrey Heptonstall.
I say, Holmes, that girl's jolly clever. I wonder what sort of school she goes to.
Elementary, my dear Watson,
Holmes replied. It was the most singular case that Holmes and I were carrying when we were caught sight of a curious couple. She, of course, was the Dean's daughter. We recognised her from previous adventures. Her companion was a white-whiskered gentleman with a concerned expression. He too had a somewhat familiar look about him.
I fear we are witnessing an abduction, Watson,
Holmes remarked.
But tell me why you think her clever.
Because she has summoned the world's most celebrated detective to keep watch over her. I saw at once that Holmes' sudden decision to leave for Oxford was no mere whim. The mysterious telegram was clearly from the young lady we were following through the woods. I was intrigued as to why the white-whiskered gentleman repeatedly took out his pocket watch.
It's quite clear,
Holmes explained with a sigh.
He needs to know the time, but there is more, I fear. He has an appointment with a photographer.
Astounded at my companion's conclusion, I questioned him.
It's evident that the white-whiskered fellow is careful about his appearance. His pocket watch serves also as a looking-glass. He's given to examining his reflection. Since his whiskers are trim, he's not visiting a barber. No, Watson, it is a photographer. And for his photograph, he requires a young lady of proud and elegant demeanour.
Then there is nothing to fear, I said.
On the contrary, Watson, there is great danger in these woods.
No sooner had Holmes spoken than a strange creature appeared, apparently from nowhere. Perhaps it had been lurking behind the trees. The wood, I observed, was full of them. A closer look at the fellow revealed a curious glint in his eye. What bizarre fantasies whirled around the mind of this madman. What weird logic had led him to the remote corner of the creative imagination. He was carrying a camera and other items of the photographer's art, no doubt in expectation of transferring the deceased ravings of his degenerate mind into reality.
There, I think, we have our man,
said Holmes, once again demonstrating his astounding powers of deduction.
Have your revolver ready, Watson, and put that most singular case down. You must be ready for action at a moment's notice.
Well, I replied, you know me, Holmes?
Yes. You are Dr. John Watson. I see you are a medical man. And this fellow is, if I'm not mistaken, as notoriously known as the Dodger, mastermind of many fiendishly clever plots. In the guise of a clergyman and using an alias, the Dodger operates in a peculiar and somewhat dangerous underworld. There's no time to lose, Watson.
As Holmes spoke, the sinister-looking photographer approached the girl and the white-whiskered creature, whose anxiety grew by the minute. What devilish plot was afoot to secrete the girl in some hideaway where who knows what fate may have awaited her? One could easily imagine the girl lured with promises of tea down dark, secret passages where, drugged and confused, she would be subjected to all manner of unseemly conduct. And all these things to be photographed.
Stop scribbling, Watson,
said Holmes,
and put on this disguise.
I saw not the Sherlock Holmes I had known for many years, but a cat with an enormous smile. My own disguise was as a dormouse.
No one will think you're alert, Watson. You'll be even less conspicuous than usual.
And so, as creatures of the woodlands, we crept closer to the Dodger, the white-whiskered anxious fellow and the unfortunate girl. Intent to whatever pernicious scheme they had in mind, the men did not see us. But the girl did.
Get a load of this! She shrieked before collapsing, no doubt overcome with relief at the sight of the world-famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, and his trusted companion, Dr. Watson.
Holmes
drew out from his cat costume his sword stick, prepared for battle against the forces of evil once more. Not fiendish snakes, not devilish poisons, nor hellhounds were a match for the mind of the master detective.
"What's going on? This is my suit," the Dodger said.
"Watson, be sure you have your revolver,"
Holmes cried out, seizing the girl from the clutches of her captors.
"You're safe with us now, my dear,"
Holmes assured the girl as she screamed in terror.
"Get your hands off me, you bleeding purse!"
The girl was clearly hysterical and did not know what she was saying.
"You're safe now, my dear,"
Holmes assured the distressed girl.
"We've no time for this," said the white-whiskered fellow. "We're late as it is. We've got to finish this shoot or we'll lose the contract."
Of course the man was mad. These were the ravings of one in a delirium. He was sure to turn savage eventually. It seemed that we had saved the girl with barely a moment to lose.
"Thousands of pounds, man," the Dodger said, as if to explain and justify his behaviour.
"Is it all about money?" I cried out. "Have you no care for the girl?"
"The agency sent her," he replied. "I don't even know her name."
"I think, Watson, we now have a case of mistaken identity,"
said Holmes.
"Rather a lot to burden you with, I'm afraid."
"I don't understand," I said.
"The telegram was not what it seemed. Am I not correct, Dodger?"
"You are, Mr. Holmes. You two are in tomorrow's shoot for Baker Street Donuts. Today we're doing Wonderland Biscuits. All in a day's work. Shame you got it all mixed up. Got to say, you took the part, though."
A most singular turn of events. For a moment, it seemed that even the greatest detective of all was baffled.
"I think, Watson,"
said Holmes,
"this is curiouser and curiouser."
And as he spoke, the girl followed the white-whiskered fellow to a hollow in the ground.
"Have you got a looking-glass, Watson?"
Holmes asked enigmatically. "Thank you very much."
"Thank you, Geoffrey Hepton Stall."
Yeah, that was brilliant. And what was that called again? I think that was called The Great Story, which we really enjoyed, and we're looking for the title. It's The Wonderland Mystery, of course. Thank you, Geoffrey. That's brilliant. So this next story is...
poem.
It's a poem. Yeah, it's a poem. And it's called Who Am I? I Am Who? And it's by Sue Al. I hope I pronounced that right. And it's going to be read by Bernadette. So over to you.
Who am I? I am who? I fell down this hole. A big hole. A big, deep hole. I fell and I stumbled. I got scared. Occasionally I enjoyed it. It even felt quite exhilarating in some places. So much so, I lost my breath. Tried to remember, where am I? Who was I? What was I doing here? Am I who? Who am I? I am who? Am I who? Who was I? Who am I now? Was I ever who I am in the first place to know who I am now? And am I still who I say I am to know I am still who I am? Or am I someone different who has taken my place? Round the bend. Gone round the bend. In the bend. Stuck, blocked. No U-turn. No back way. No return. Void of anything. Tell me. I have all the time in the world. Surprise me. Tell me more. I'll say no more. More is to come. To follow. Follow me down this hole. And you shall find out. Follow me down this hole. And you shall find it. Who am I? I am who? By Sue Al.
Great. Fantastic. So this next one is going to do two short poems by David Morgan, one now and one at the end. And this first one is called Emily Webb.
"Oh dear," cried Emily. "There's a spider in the bath."
"Spider?" said her father. "Don't make me laugh. You've seen spiders before. Pull yourself together, daughter."
"Yes, I know,"
Emily replied.
But this one's a metre wide, and it's using up all the hot water.
Thank you, David. That's the first of his poems, very short and sweet.
Thanks, Gareth. This next story is called The Adventure, and it's by Catherine Hayes. Gerald lived a charmed life. He would snuggle himself into his little hole and pop out for something to eat. He thought well of himself, just enough, not too well, mind. He thought of himself as well turned out. And this was because he'd recently seen himself for the first time. It's always difficult for small animals to truly see themselves. Gerald spent a lot of time, an awful lot of time, avoiding others. Where he lived at the bottom of a concert hall, people would go during the day to eat their lunch or use the free Wi-Fi or nap. Gerald just occasionally would get under someone's foot and he'd have to run for it. He'd hear them shout, but by then Gerald was off because he was always just a teensy bit afraid. Too much attention would attract that minx again.
So difficult, he thought. Never can tell whether they're going to react badly. I often try, but my overtures are rejected. I never seem to attract much positive attention.
Gerald was struggling with a sense of his true self. All he knew was when he was hungry or tired, or when peculiar sounds reverberated through the ground. Sometimes there was a loud crashing, or sometimes there would be somebody calling to him in a light voice, a soft melody, sometimes at a high pitch, he could never be sure. And at night time, when he should be out and about, he had to be even more careful because people would arrive and they would lounge about and drink things, stand in awkward places and drop down their coats. Gerald had to be careful he never got scooped up in one of those coats. But this particular afternoon, scrambling along the side of the wall, Gerald found himself going up. The space where he'd just been disappeared, and he felt motion. He didn't like it. How would he get back to where he hid, underneath the banquettes and waiting for people to drop little bits of cake or crisps? He shut his eyes, then opened them again. The wall moved. Sniffing it, Gerald moved forward and came out towards where he thought he recognised his quarters. It wasn't, but it looked and smelt very familiar. He hid himself along the wall and followed it around for where he felt a similar bend to where his hole should be. But it wasn't there. He had to go on further to get round to the side, and he passed something very bright, an opening where he could see people moving in and out, picking up objects and putting them down again. Gerald passed by a wall near this opening and then suddenly caught a glimpse in the shiny glass of an outline, a bunny outline. He sniffed it. It sniffed back at him. And the shape was distinctly rabbit-like.
Is this me?
Gerald thought.
Is this finally the sense of what I am? What I look like? Me?
It'd be a long way down, and he was afraid to go back the way he came. But he looked again at the sight before him. So this is what his true self was. This outline.
Well, if I have those kind of ears and that kind of tail and my whiskers, yeah, I feel different, confident. My home's tiresome, I don't like it. I moved once before to avoid that minx that used to wait around for me all day, but now she's gone and I don't have to care. Yes, I think I will do this today.
So Gerald stuck close again to the wall and found his way back towards the wall that moved, and he waited very quietly until he could go forward. But instead of going down, he went up. He wasn't really sure about the sensation because he'd never felt himself go higher than he had now. So again, he was afraid.
No, I've got that lovely tail and those lovely big ears. Nothing bad can happen to me.
Gerald moved the movement, the wall moved, and he scuttled out. Above him were green fronds. He didn't like the look of those. His courage deserted him. His fur started to glisten with moisture and he felt rather hot and thirsty all of a sudden. And at that moment, a bee, regally adorned, buzzed towards him.
You absolutely cannot stay here. It's our weekly meeting and you're not a member.
But, said Gerald, I'm lost. I don't know the way.
Well, it's not my problem.
She started to usher him out by buzzing close to him. Her face wore a look of mistrust when she looked at Gerald. It made him uncomfortable. He'd taken a wrong turning. Didn't see why she was being so fussy.
Look. She took pity on him. Turn left, left, left again. You'll find your way down, I promise you. Zzz.
A few more bees started to notice him. Were not friendly looking. He turned to go back the way he came, but the door was sealed and he couldn't get out. He would have to wait. It grew warmer, and Gerald started to feel very hot. He didn't know the sensation because he was always cool in his hole. Sweat, little beads of it, formed on Gerald's brow. The greenhouse was home to other types of animals that Gerald never really paid attention to. Flies, bugs and others such as butterflies. A gush of air, noise and the feet of many humans rushed about in one part of the garden. Gerald moved through and found that he was in a cooler place where humans stood about making a lot of noise and dropping little morsels on the floor. He looked for the wall.
I've forgotten the basic law of being a close to the floor creature. Stick to the wall, this will guide you around.
So Gerald walked all the way around until his path was blocked. He felt a slight breeze, and then just as he thought he might have to turn back, the doors opened and he went over the threshold. Sudden movement downward made Gerald uneasy. He felt himself descending. It was too quick, and his beautiful ears hurt a little bit. His paws were a bit wobbly. But eventually Gerald found himself back where he'd started, his original home, and he felt so happy that he scuttled across the floor and made straight for it. A warm light bathed the corridor. It wasn't Gerald's regular path. He could hear some sound, and then as he drew closer, he could hear a high note calling sweetly. He moved forward and turned. There was a large space stretched before him, and in the distance, he saw the person making the sound. She was dressed in such a way that shined, and Gerald felt himself drift along, hypnotised by the sound she made. The singer's dress was black and red. It shimmered as she moved. She seemed commanding, then angry, and they began again in a light way. And Gerald was mesmerised. There seems to be lots of rushing about, people this way and that, the woman in red and black shouting at the others.
She had such a beautiful sound that I think I'd better get out.
The only way was back the way he'd come.
I've got this lovely tan and a pair of lovely ears and I'm strong. I've been on an adventure, I don't necessarily like it, but I've seen lots more than I ever thought.
He stuck back to the side of the wall along the corridor. There were some people walking by him carrying something large. At that moment, one of the humans put down the heavy item almost on Gerald's tail. He turned. The heavy thing was a mirror. It was being moved from the dressing room. Gerald got a bit of a shock. The mirror didn't lie. He didn't have tall ears and he didn't have a fluffy tail. He'd been mistaken. Instead, he was very small. He was rather brown. A long tail.
Of course I have a long tail. I can see it. I'm such a...
He looked at himself in the mirror again.
Be brave.
He kept close to the side of the wall in the corridor as far as he could. The ground began to slope upwards and eventually he found an opening. He was back into his original floor within the concert hall.
Careful now. She could be anywhere.
He crept around and saw his own hole and how happy he was. There were many people about or noisy children, but he could see her, that minx who always wanted him to come out to play. She was distracted, annoyed because there were humans everywhere and she couldn't decide which ones were worth exploiting. And he made a dash for it. Before the monks could see him, he was inside. He found some food he'd forgotten.
Just as I left it.
He flopped down and looked around satisfied. And then he slept.
The Adventure by Catherine Hayes.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Catherine. That was absolutely great. Brilliant. Okay, and now we have the last poem we promised you, one of David Morgan's poems, to finish us off. And this is called Danny Bone. Danny Bone had been a dog in an earlier existence. In fact, he looks like one now, when seen from a distance.
I wish I had my tail to wag, said Danny Bone one morning,
and bit his teacher's left leg without the slightest warning.
Thank you very much. Danny Bone by David Morgan. Well, that's it. That's been great.
Thank you so much. moving away from Alice in Wonderland now. Shortly, we'll be having a podcast about heroes and villains.
Yes.
We'll let you know the date of that soon.
Yes.
Meantime, sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams. And please look out for our hero show. We're going to be doing a hero show in London at the Albany, September the 14th that week, isn't it, I think? Mm-hmm. And then in Birmingham from about the 28th of September.
So check out the website for details. That's www.thewhiterabbit.org.uk.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.